It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, this episode of Farm to Table Talk is made possible by Idea Farming Consulting and by EcoFarm, an annual gathering of farmers, wannabe farmers, their friends, suppliers, customers, and fellow dreamers, sponsored by the Ecological Farming Association. While the annual EcoFarm takes place in Pacific Grove, California, on the coast of Monterey Bay, there are similar gatherings taking place all over. And what I really like about these events is that you find so many inspiring stories of people who dream of being farmers, and with persistence and support and luck, many realize those dreams. Last year, I spoke to Melissa Phillips, who with her husband, Jack Wedham, moved to California from Texas to be woofers on the Kern family farms in the Sierras. And for the recent EcoFarm, Melissa was at home on the farm with their toddler, Phoenix, and I had the chance to catch up with her husband, Jack Wedham, about their family's journey and pursuing their dream to their new farm in New York's Hudson River Valley. So, Jack Wedham, welcome to Farm to Table Talk. I seldom have the opportunity to talk to the other half of a couple back-to-back EcoFarms, but I'm doing it this time. I spoke to your wife last year about your journey, and that journey continues. I'm going to have you explain that. You are currently here in the States, and you've been involved as a woofer. We'll explain what that is. But why don't you back up a little bit and explain where you started out?
Yeah, I grew up in and around London. I had a quasi-serious job. I was a national sales director for a big food and beverage company in London. And about 8 years ago, they asked me to come out to America to help expand their company on these shores. And had some really enjoyable years working for them, but it was when we had our daughter Phoenix, I kind of realized it all just felt a little bit unnatural. Wasn't getting much time to spend with her. She'd be asleep when I went to work, asleep when I got back from work, and I'd be on my phone replying to emails and taking phone calls at the weekend. So Melissa and I had a little bit of a crisis meeting and decided somewhat controversially that we'd quit our jobs, sell all of our possessions, and kind of followed the trend of many other people in midlife crises and bought a 1982 hippie camper van, and we were going to take a year out to travel America.
You kinda didn't like paint flowers on it or anything?
No, there was pre-painted stripes on it, which looks super cool. So it definitely draws a lot of attention. I definitely sometimes have children follow me down the street asking for ice creams.
There must have been a point. I mean, I understand everybody has those conversations that saying, okay, this sucks. Let's get out of here. But they usually talk themselves out of it. You two are kind of the exception. I mean, that you took a hard look at where you were and say, let's do something drastic. And then you did. I imagine when you went in and told the people you were working with and friends and neighbors, they all kind of scratched their head and said, what in the world are they up to?
Yeah, there was definitely some raised eyebrows and some interesting conversations and friends and family members. But we'd realized for a while that we kind of wanted to do something different. And I guess the motivation was just had a baby. We'd just both turned 30 recently and kind of figured that if we didn't do something different now, there'd never be the opportunity again. So we bit the bullet and jumped on the train. And now here we are about to be starting our own farm in the Hudson Valley in a mere matter of weeks.
So where'd you jump on the train from? Where were you when you made this decision?
We're in San Antonio, Texas. We decided we'd take a year out. We were going to break up our travels with month-long stays at different farms. Kern Family Farm, where we've been at the past for a couple of years, was the first place that we stopped in at. And yeah, we cancelled our travels. We were having such a great time on the farm, learning and getting great experiences, that we stuck around. And fast forward 2 years and we have all the experience and skills. I say we have all the experience and skills needed to start our own farm. We'll see about that, but we feel like we're in a great position to be doing it.
Well, you just plunged in. I mean, you've learned everything about farming. And before you did this, did either of you have experience farming?
Not farming, but one of the things that really inspired us into anything agricultural related was being part of a neighborhood group in San Antonio. So we were part of a community group that petitioned the local council council to set up a community garden, and were around for the first 6 months of that and saw the fruition of some of the first fruits and vegetables that we laid. And that was just a really empowering and inspiring experience. And if we hadn't done that, we probably wouldn't have been thinking about stepping in and maybe potentially volunteering at different farms as we were traveling around America.
So how did you find out about that? So at that stage, had you heard about Woofers, which worldwide organic...
Worldwide opportunities on organic farms. Melissa had, I hadn't. And it was really just a situation that we had a finite amount of money and we knew we wanted to be on the road for a year. So looking at staying places for a month or 2 months along the way was going to help us extend our trip while getting a little bit of experience in sustainable agriculture. It was something we definitely had an interest in, but that interest was massively fostered by the Kern family when we were at their farm. They really inspired us, and it was through doing the work on a daily basis that we kind of figured out that it's what we wanted to make our life's work.
So you end up finding the farm, the Kern family farm, and for people that don't understand where it is, it's in the Sierras, right on the going up the mountains.
Yep.
And I think what the closest large city is probably Fresno.
Fresno, yep.
And then back up into the mountains, and you're not in a town. You're at least what? You're several miles away from a town of 3,000.
Yeah, we are. The property is actually in an island in the National Forest, so you can walk in any direction. And once you jump over the fence, you're in National Forest land. So it is a pretty special location. It's only like 20 miles as the crow flies from Yosemite National Park as well. So,
so you find these beautiful guys, and they say, yeah, come on, you guys can come on board. Kind of unusual, too. You come on as not only as a couple, you come on as a family
and a dog.
The
whole family with our crazy dog, yeah. It was... I think they had to talk long and hard about it as a family before accepting us. And I think, you know, Melissa and I had a lot to offer. We both had long careers in the corporate world and you know, passions about sustainable agriculture. So I think they took a whim and a little bit of a risk in taking us. But a couple years later, and it's worked out really, really well for everybody. So
you show up and you got the van, you got the dog, and you got the baby at that stage. What did they provide you for housing?
Yeah, so... like most places, when you're staying there for a couple months, you get varying degrees of quality accommodation. They gave us an RV, been out of commission for a few years. It was more than comfortable. But as soon as it became apparent that we were going to be staying for longer and taking on more responsibilities, they were really, really kind in offering our family to stay in the guest house, which is important because when we arrived, Phoenix wasn't mobile. She wasn't even crawling. And as soon as she began crawling and walking, we realized that we couldn't, you know, if we're going to stay long term, we'd need some more permanent accommodation with some of the standard mod cons of life.
Yeah, but do you have electricity?
We do have electricity. The whole farm's solar powered, so when the sun shines, we can charge our phones, and when it doesn't, we can't.
Are you online? Are you able to
get
on the internet?
Yeah, we do have the internet, yeah.
And so now you start off, and you're doing all the things that people have to do in that kind of a farming operation. So one or both of you are planting or hoeing or harvesting or doing those sorts of chores that a farmer has. One big difference is that at some stage you start having a toddler kind of hanging out with you too. Does your daughter get out into the fields any with the two of you when you were doing that sort of work?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most empowering aspects of the whole thing has been the experience of working with Phoenix in the fields. It went from her just being strapped onto Melissa's back and me doing most of the work to her kind of crawling around the fields. But she's worked with us, and up until this point, it's been great. Seeing her, you know, go around and help plant transplants into the ground. Her first words being kale and carrot, or kale and carrot being amongst her first words.
I think I was 30 before I knew what kale was.
So. Yeah. I think her first word was actually no, closely followed by why. but yeah, carrot and kale were definitely soon after that. But it's been awesome. Now I think we're in a position where we definitely need to be putting her into some childcare more, because you can't do parenting and farming both great if you're trying to do them at the same time.
Digging in all that dirt, though, she's going to be protected from all sorts of things.
Yeah.
The exposure she's had.
We hope that.
So... So it didn't take too long for them to figure out that you two had these other experiences. You have been in sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. And how did you start kind of getting involved in adding more than just the labor you were providing as farming, looking at the websites and looking at some of the marketing things the farm was doing?
Yeah, so we'd been there a couple months, and Melissa and I had a conversation about sticking around. But if we stuck around, we wanted to have a little bit more kind of one-to-one learning with the Kern family and take on a few more responsibilities. And through those responsibilities, we wanted to learn more. So I wanted to be taught about greenhouse production and a whole plethora of other farming skills that I needed to have. And I found through working on the farm, I just saw this huge opportunity on the sales and marketing side. It's not something they'd ever really thought about, not really anything they put into practice, but they were growing incredible produce and they were selling most of it at their grocery store in the town of North Fork, but not much at local restaurants. So I spoke to them and freely offered my time to sell some of their produce for them, and did it, and it worked great. And a couple years on, we've sold way more than we ever have before, and we've got 4 or 5 great local restaurant contracts that buy our food from us every week. So I learned a huge amount from them. I'd like to say they learned some from me as well, but both of us have definitely been able to add a lot of our skills to the operation.
So there comes a time where Phoenix is in bed and you two are sitting there and saying, okay, now what do we do next? Where do we, you know, this has been great. What's our next step? What were the options you started looking at?
The options are continue farming or pack it all in and go back into the corporate world, getting well-paid jobs. And we opted for the former, which is definitely probably the harder decision from a financial standpoint and everything else. Definitely much more risk involved in that, but you know, you only live once.
What they say. Everybody says that.
This is a fair point.
So what about, how did you find this next opportunity?
So let me talk about the next opportunity, because it's a really unique one. We'd been looking for a long, long time. We wanted to buy a piece of land. Our finances from when we quit our jobs until around about now have just been steadily dwindling. So the prospect of us buying anywhere was becoming somewhat unrealistic. So we were using organizations like Farmlink in California, and there's Farmlinks in almost every state, and they're great organizations that help connect beginner farmers with landowners. And through Farmlink, we met a couple called Eugene and Claire from the East Coast. And we'd never really met anyone like them. We'd seen lots of lease opportunities for farmland, but these are a couple guys with passions about sustainable agriculture living in New York. And they really wanted to do something to help beginner farmers. So they had their own vision of creating this agri-hood, like an agricultural neighborhood, where they would purchase a piece of land, have a giant farm in the middle of it, and they would build structures on the outside of the land for us beginner farmers to live in. Their plans got scaled down a little bit, but they purchased 15 acres in New York and built a big house on the land. The house is split into two, so half of it was going to be for a farming family and the other half of it would be for their family. And they would allow the farmers to farm the land and not pay any lease fees, and allow the farmers to have a long-term lease. Because one of the struggles is, as a beginner farmer, you're looking at short-term leases, and 1 or 2 years really not enough time to make an imprint anywhere, particularly when you start factoring in all of the startup costs. We met these folks, and they were coming at it from a very philanthropic and altruistic viewpoint. We met them in New York. They were great. We really felt like we could work together. So it kind of felt that all the boxes were ticked. Had we not have found the opportunity, and it not have been as easy for us to start things up, we might have gone in a different direction. But here we are. We're doing the thing.
Well, when you say New York, because a lot of people listen and they just have a vision of New York, big buildings and cement. But you are going, what, out in the out the Hudson River?
Yeah, it's about 30 miles west of the Hudson River, close to a town of Middletown, about 30, 45 minutes away from Poughkeepsie, on the southern tip of the Catskill Mountains.
So it's kind of rolling and trees and...
Somewhat rolling. To be fair, when we went to visit the place, It was cold and cloudy, and there is a bar just down the road called Mountain View. But I couldn't see more than 100 feet through the fog when we visited. So I'm looking forward to seeing the mountains when we return again in the summer.
So how many acres are you going to be working with initially?
So initially in year one, we're going to be working with about 3.5 acres. We'll probably have 30% of that in production in year one, and the rest will be cover cropping.
And is it going to, are you going to be required, you think, to get any larger? Do you think this can sustain you for 5 or 6 years? Or
I think it can definitely sustain us. We're going to be following a very similar model to what we've been doing at Kern Family Farm, which is small scale mixed vegetable market gardening, selling our products directly to restaurants, CSAs and farmers market. Eugene and Claire, actually, they have a lot of great contracts in the restaurant industry, so we're actually starting this lease with a couple of restaurants that I already met with when we went to visit them that already want to buy our produce. So it's a great position to be starting from.
So do you find, like, when you're going out and talk to a restaurant and you're trying to get lined up to be able to have this, do you go in and start the conversation, you know, I'm new and I can grow this, this, and this, or do you say, what would you like to see me grow? I mean, what are the kinds of, you know, vegetables that you may not have readily available right now that we might consider to put into our farm plan?
Yeah, I think there's many different things that can work, and it depends on the farm and it depends on the restaurant. I really love the idea of restaurant-supported agriculture, so having a strong relationship with some chefs and working with them to understand what their needs are and what their menu needs are. If people need X type of vegetable, it's going to take a year of planning to make sure that they can have that. You might be talking about things that you can grow for them in the following growing season, but you can't even get to that stage unless you have a good relationship with them. And, you know, it's always better to have warm introductions with chefs instead of just walking into restaurants completely cold and asking to speak to people. So any ways you can be getting referrals are great, and a lot of that comes from doing a great job meeting the needs of restaurants that you might already be supplying.
Well, you know, it's not a very large acreage you're talking about, but are you going to have to buy a tractor or other equipment, or is a lot of it going to be just hand labor?
For the most part, it's going to be hand labor, and because it's me and just me and my wife initially, and we'll probably rely on the help of some volunteers. You know, we're going to be choosing our tools wisely to make the job easier. So we'll be getting like a BCS 850 two-wheel walk behind tractor, which has a lot of implements to make our role a little bit easier. Because we don't have a giant volunteer labor force to be calling upon, and we do want to have some free time for ourselves. So that's, you know, the importance of starting small and sustainably and making sure we have room to grow sustainably.
So I've heard other people that have gone down these roads, and, you know, CSAs work into it, farmers markets, stands. You've had experience with shop in town that was selling some vegetables with your current experience, and then the restaurants. From what I've heard, it's great, maybe the best I've heard about, was when you have the restaurant relationships. You have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and do all these things for farmers markets. But it seems like the thing that people really like to shoot for is to try to get at least some top-end restaurants that really have a story to tell and have unique vegetables and talk about the farmer, and they're going to say, you know, this is Jack and Melissa, and they're growing these things for us.
Yeah, you know, I think all of those markets play a really strong part in the success of any small farm. And I think when we start out, it would be silly of us to just pin our flag to the mast of any one of those markets. So our plan for growth is to start by having a small CSA, a small group of local restaurants and selling at farmers markets, and making sure we evolve in line with what's working well for us. There's also, you know, really other exciting new markets coming up as far as selling produce directly. You have the healthcare market. There's more and more hospitals and healthcare centers who are taking diet much more seriously than they used to, and there's some potential inns there. And one of the things that we're really passionate about is schools, because I feel it's important to be inspiring the next generation of new farmers, and they're not always the most lucrative people to be selling to, but we fully intend on being involved as much as we can do in the local school community, helping them where possible run school gardens and advise, and if we can, sell some of our produce to them as well.
You know, I understand how that could be satisfying. It's hard to imagine that there can be profit involved in those ventures. I mean, are those things that you do just take them on because you feel it's worth doing, and you figure out a way how to get it in, or is there any way to get some returns from those kind of activities?
There can be, but I think it's a balance. You know, I would love to go out and do all of these great social things, and I've already been inspired by people talking about awesome things related to getting children involved in agriculture and some of the more charitable aspects of sustainable agriculture. But to be fair, a sinking ship can't save any other ships. So I think, you know, one of the first things we need to do is be a profitable farm and then expand from there. So I would love to be involved in a lot of these more social projects. And where we can, we will. And hopefully that's really soon. Hopefully that's in year one. But first and foremost, making money ourselves is going to be important, so we can continue to do what we're doing and affect exponentially more people.
Jack, you've probably heard it snows in New York, and you've lived in Texas, and you're in the mountains, so you get some weather up here in California too. But there's a lot of the year you're going to have a hard time growing in New York. Are you looking at maybe putting a hoop house up or something like that to get some production through the winter somehow?
Yeah, so firstly, I put my phone away and I've taken New York off of my list of places that tells me where the weather forecast is, because it's just scaring me daily. I think what we'll do is really enjoy taking 2 or 3 months off over the winter. There's a lot to be said about the benefits of having a couple months off of farming. California, you know, we're standing here now. It's super sunny. It's really warm. I'm pretty much just in my t-shirt. But that's not going to be the case in New York. But in California, you're working all year round as a farmer. So I think we will do some season extension. But we're also quite looking forward to not working in the cold and dreary winter months.
You still got the same van that you started off with?
We did. And unfortunately, we're having to sell it. So we have a lot of our possessions in Austin. And in order to do this whole farm thing, we're going to need a truck. So we're selling our van and buying a pickup truck, and we're both pretty sad about it, but I've got about 50 people that have replied to our Craigslist ad, so hopefully it's going to go to someone who'll make good use of it.
So very shortly, you're going to have a new pickup, or a different pickup anyway, and you and Melissa and Phoenix and your dog are going to be on the road going to Texas from California, from California to Texas, and now Texas up to New York, and shortly be settling in and getting yourself organized. And what an adventure. You must be pretty excited about it.
Yeah, a mixture of excitement, happiness, sadness, worry, and definitely all the emotions in there. But what it does do is feel really good to be going out and doing something on our own. I mean, we're taking a big risk, but it feels like the stars are aligning for us. A lot of things seem to be happening for the right reasons. So we hope we can have a chat with you again in a couple of years and be talking about some of the great things that we've been doing.
Well, let's keep in touch. And it turns out that Farm to Table Talk has listeners in that whole area you're talking about. You know, we've got listeners all over the world here and there, but that happens to be one area that there's a lot of people that are tuned in. I want to hear from you again. Wish you the best. What a great adventure.
Thank you so much.
So Jack?
Jack Wenham, Hidden Acre Farms.
Okay. Well, listen, best of luck to you. Thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
All right. Thanks so much, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.